Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin.
With guest co-host
Mega Bears Fan.
There's a thing that could get changed. The scoring system. We all know how much Dan loves the scoring system.
Yeah.
How about we just get rid of it?
Score is very important when he has the highest one.
No, what we need to do is just get rid of the scores and just have a rank from, I don't know, say 1 to 10. And then...
No, you and your top 10, Dan.
And then for Civ 7, please put score back in the game. We miss it so much.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Hello, and welcome to episode 257. I am the Mian Team, and I'm joined by regular co-host Dan Q.
Hi there.
Majin.
Echo.
Makalua.
I'm an echo. I went right now. I need some caffeine in it.
And guest co-host, Mega Bears Fan.
Black Phantom Mega Bears Fan has invaded.
Oh, man. Fishing for backstabs already. Well, I do approve.
Of backstabs?
Yeah, and fishing for them. Both things.
Speaking of approving, Mackie, did you see the apparent screenshot of coffee?
No.
The screenshot of the coffee resource? I don't know if it's true or not.
It's not a legitimate resource. Troll.
Hey. Do not make me both me and Mad come over there and hurt you.
No, you don't understand. You should be assuming that the civs have it, because otherwise you will be lacking in coffee.
Well, if you don't have coffee, you're just a turn behind all the other players.
Probably. That or your face first on the keyboard getting quartitis.
All your turns is three times as long because you have no coffee.
Oh, man, don't bring that up. Hopefully Civ 6 has a turn timer that's decent.
Now, the question is, how much time between turns?
That is a serious question, yes. Is that one of our topics today? Not really.
Does the AI need coffee?
It'll demand it, but I bet it won't take its turns faster because it doesn't know how to use coffee.
Instead of slowing you down if you don't have coffee, you speed up if you have coffee. So, like, your turn timer is double if you have coffee resource.
Double? Isn't that the opposite of speeding up?
Well, assuming it's caffeinated, right? Not this decaffeinated coffee. Is that even coffee?
No.
They even filled those that.
It's not like caffeine-free diet soda. Caffeine-free coffee is heresy.
Actually, Civilization VI is really the second expansion pack to Beyond Earth. Suckers! No.
Yeah, you know, you start on Earth, you get the space victory, then you get launched into Beyond Earth.
No. Beyond Earth is what happened when you won the space race in Civ 5. Now, Civ 6 is what happens when you win the, emancipation victory in Beyond Earth, where you go back to Earth.
Yeah.
See, it's circular.
Totally circular. There you go.
Circle of Civ life?
Dan always did like emancipation when I ran that in Civ 4.
City-states. Envoys. So you can no longer just buy out city-states.
And that's, of course, assuming that you can't just eventually buy envoys with gold somehow, which hopefully they did not put in.
Yeah. So core of the stuff that's changed with city-states is no more throwing money at them to have an influence bar rise and fall over time. You have envoys that you get somehow. Some quests are still in, apparently. So you can get them that way. But obviously, there's probably a normal generation way of doing it. And then each city state gives you a bonus to your city at the first level. And then a couple envoys later, you get a bonus to a bunch of districts. And a couple more bonuses later, you get more bonuses to your districts. But as much as that might sound familiar, or at least similar, more importantly, city states are now unique in their ally bonus or Caesarean bonuses. So of the ones we know, Hattusa provides you with one of every strategic resource you have revealed but do not own. And that could be great for a lot of stuff. If the resource distribution is about the same as Civ 5, you're going to play Rome or somebody who needs iron for their unique unit, build out a ton of warriors or whatever this time, and find out that the closest iron is on the other side of the map.
That's what you'll do with one iron, though.
But if you have one, I mean, even if you only had one in Civ 5, you could upgrade a unit, right?
Yeah. And you'd have one Noobtorian, or Legion, as it's properly called.
Yeah, but then if you get the muskets, then you can upgrade through the path.
No, it's not worthless. And I mean, certainly having one uranium has a lot of potential if you have good money. But
well, speaking of upgrades, I definitely hope that Civ 6 lets you skip units in the unit line and like spend more gold to upgrade to the next level instead of having to go through that process of, oh my goodness, I only have one iron. I have to, one at a time per turn, upgrade all of my long swords.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there.
In fact, it'd also be really nice if somewhere on the UI, if they just had like an upgrade all units button that just did all of them that can be upgraded. That would be nice.
Oh, you mean like they had in Civ 4? Not to mention the selection stuff. But
oh yeah, Civ 4.
You did skip when you upgraded and you paid more for further upgrades.
Well, that's fine. But you still skipped it. You didn't get stuck going, yeah, I'd like to upgrade 2 levels up, but this resource I'm missing in the one in the middle, and now I can't do crap about it.
Yeah, no, that wasn't a thing in 4, just 5.
Sorry, guys, no nice guns. You have to wait for your crappy sword first.
Here you go. Hold on to this.
For like 3 seconds. Now here's a gun.
Drew Sane asks in the chat from the official blog announcement by 2K. He quotes, in Civilization 6, city-states are much more streamlined over their Civilization 5 counterparts, unquote. Drew asks, how could it have been any simpler? Well, I think that's just what we call marketing speak.
Yeah, because I think the word streamlined here might be a little off.
I would prefer that term reserved for, like, okay, this takes you less actions to accomplish than before.
Yeah, because it seems like they did a little more. Making every city-state have a unique bonus, which we haven't fully covered. Like, Jerusalem automatically converts to your religion and exerts pressure for that religion as if it were your holy city. So, extra holy city. Kind of nice. Zanzibar gives you 2 unique resources. Cinnamon and cloves or something like that, I think. So, that's actually more. Envoys, well, that's different, but I'm not sure it could be considered streamlined since you're not just, like, picking a couple policies, getting up to a certain level, and always getting their bonuses. You actually sort of have to do something.
Yeah.
To keep it.
Well, the streamlining might also refer to maybe the UI and interface, because looking at these pictures that are on the Steam page, it looks like there's a nice little list of what all of the exact bonuses are at all the different, you know, levels of friendliness. So it's not like you have to highlight over things to figure out what the heck things do and stuff like that. It looks like it's all just printed right there on the screen.
Well, maybe that's you can just interact user with them interface.
More yeah, streamlining UI is streamlining the game, and Civ needs it desperately.
I don't know if you consider that streamlined. It's like, okay, instead of having to click each individual one to go, okay, what do you get? You have one UI spot to see them all. That's nice. Good UI. But then again, in Civ 5, well, you knew the Maritime City-State gave you food. And they had 2 levels. It was friendly, you got 2 food in your capital. Allied, you got food everywhere. You knew that. So it's not like you really had to look at each of them. But I guess if you want to be Dan and run around bullying every city state, that might have taken more clicks because you had to go to each and every single city state to press the bully button. Maybe
or
this
you're
way you
trying to fish for specific right bonuses, or you're trying to manage the Diplo game in the late game, and you're trying to micro-influence that kind of stuff. Yeah, I can see it saving quite a bit of time over the course of a game if they made it more simple to interact with them.
You know, Imagine brings up a very good point, and it actually ties to Jason's comment about any units that you can upgrade, just upgrade them all in one go. Rather than my having to check each individual city-states if I can bully them, just give me a nice screen that summarizes, here are all the city-states you can bully, and if you have enough gold, I press the button and I bully all of them. I like this idea. That is streamlining for the better.
I hate to break this to you, Dan, but I'm not even seeing a bully button on these screenshots. All I see is declare war. So unless the player already bullied them all, you might be out of luck there.
Yeah, Dan.
I think it's just hidden. They can't take that away from me. They just...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not allowed.
Although one nice thing in here, in the first screenshot, looks like you can pay the city-state to take over their units. Which, again, is more functionality. It's not like you could do that in Civ 5.
Yeah, so rather than the hope that, hey, I've got a city-state ally, it'd be great if they joined the war, you take control over those units as if they were your own. That's nice.
And then they did join the war.
all right, city state units will finally actually do something, except for block my workers from building that road they told me to build.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you don't have to declare war to have that obstacle, Jason. You can enjoy that in peacetime, too.
Exactly. Oh, but wait, there's more.
If you buy now.
Yeah, if you buy now. Since trade routes make roads, you don't have to have the stupid worker train shove through all the city-state units if they want the road quest still.
No, they probably took the road quest away.
Oh, I'm sure they found another way to block your stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, well, of course. And while the city-state is at war, players can send an envoy if they are at war with the city-state, potentially changing the city-state's allegiance in the middle of the conflict. Ooh.
Hey, you know, we're getting blocked by war.
Is there a random chance that the city-state can just Sparta kick your envoy off a cliff?
As long as they put a video to that.
I'm not so sure about this. If you're going to use a strategy involving the city-state units, there needs to be some counterplay to units just turning on you. Or more likely, you causing the AI's units to turn on it at a really inopportune time.
We need to take Jason's interpretation and apply that to the sentence on the blog post about city-states and envoys. Quote, there are certain conditions and actions that may allow envoys to be removed from a city-state, so let's interpret that as a random number generator boot of your envoy. Haha. Uh-huh.
Perfect.
It also says, of course, that declaring war on a city-state removes all envoys the player has there. Really?
Oh, declare war on somebody and they decided that you're not going to have influence with them anymore?
My question then is, if you've removed all of the envoys, let's say you've got three envoys in that city-state that you've declared war on, does that mean you get to reassign those three envoys? Or are they gone? Were they dispatched, as it were?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. I don't see an answer to that, though.
Maybe that's where the Spartic comes from.
Or is it just going to be treated like trade routes? Nope, you don't get to reassign that trade route. That trade route's just gone, man.
So they don't Sparta kick him into a bottomless pit. We Sparta kick them to the next city.
Just from the chat, have we heard definitely if envoys or units are assigned like spies in Civ 5, asks Pete P. I don't think we've heard one way or the other.
Yeah, pretty much.
That would be miserable. I certainly hope not.
Yeah, well, I mean, it probably could depend. Given that there's levels of what you get, if you can do all the quests for a city-state, then you're going to get pretty close or at the top level of it. And then all you really need to do is the last little bit to fight over who's the boss for the extra bonus.
Well, they did say there are certain conditions that can allow an envoy to be removed, so maybe there's some sort of decay process similar to in Civ 5. Who knows?
Anywho, city-states are back.
Yay. And they're not stations like Beyond Earth. So
yay! You might not want to just straight up destroy them.
Now that would be streamlining. Eh? Eh?
Eh?
Yeah.
Nah. Well, yeah, yes, yes. There's how city-states end up being simpler. We make them like stations in Beyond Earth. There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's pretty hard to form a line, a streamline or otherwise, with a sledgehammer. Even if you're pretty strong, it tends to be a little messier than a straight line.
Otherwise, in Civilization VI news...
Is everybody else excited about it?
No.
No, we don't just do a podcast about it and get up on Saturday morning to talk about it. Nah, we hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I actually did feel a little bit of mixed feelings, and I actually wrote a blog about it. I'm really surprised that this came so soon. I thought it was going to be a couple of years before we would get a Civ 6. I mean, I really like what I'm seeing so far from Civ 6. One of my biggest complaints with Civ 5 was that it felt so much like a war-focused game. Like, I compared it to Risk Through the Ages or Axis and Allies or something like that, because there was just so much focus in Civ 5 on units and combat. And it looks like 6 is going to be going for more of an empire management approach with all the new city management stuff. That looks really cool. So it looks like building your handful of cities and turtling through the game might actually be engaging and not just an exercise in hitting end turn over and over and over again.
Yeah, Jason, I don't know. We on Polycast might have spent an entire episode towards the end of Season 9 talking about that very article you had.
I believe you did, yeah.
Episode 244 over at thepolycast.net.
And I remember I got some very strong words on some things, so...
Maybe.
But yeah, the city's management, and it looks like they've got some kind of government stuff that's been revealed. Looks interesting. The only thing that I worry about that, every time you unlock a new one, you can change the ones that you have. So I'm wondering if they limit that in any way, because it seems like that would be kind of too often. But I guess we'll see how it ends up balancing out.
I think on the last episode, we were making the distinction between being able to swap governments and swap civics.
Yeah, that's right. There is a difference between them, isn't there?
Yeah, because we've got both now. Rather than either or, we can have both. And of course, we're hoping for the best of both worlds and not the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering if maybe they've got some system where maybe you're only allowed to replace one at a time, or are you allowed to place everything? I don't know.
Well, the comment about civics was that if you research a new civic, then you can swap civics such as your government type allows, right? Because certain government types, you can only get military and economic and wildcard or some combination thereof. Or I guess in some cases, there are some government types that you don't get any particular type of civic. But that when you discover a new civic, because that's a parallel tech tree to the research standard technology tree, that you can swap civics for free on that turn, but otherwise you would have to pay gold. So it then comes down to, do you have the gold? Do you want to spend the gold? Is that the best use for the gold? Is that the best use for spending your time on your turn? Which, of course, in a turn-based game is perhaps more of an issue in a multiplayer game, which is, are we waiting for you to swap your civics again? No.
Right.
That's totally going to happen.
Yeah, but I just worry about, say, for example, you've got maybe one civic that speeds up the production of settlers and another speeds up the production of units. Like, if you're able to switch every 10 turns, you could just swap in the civic that gives you faster settlers and then just go on a settler building spree. And then 10 turns later, swap it for units and go on a unit building spree and then just keep alternating between the two. And that seems a little bit maybe exploitative. But like I said, it's going to depend on how everything's paced and balanced.
Yeah, I would say that comes down to how much do you want to micromanage?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's something where it is consistently, if not required, but gives you a considerable advantage to do that kind of micromanagement every single time you get a new civic, for example, then you start questioning the design of that, because that is not streamlined. But at the same time, if you want to get down into the nitty-gritty, and if it's looking like on the higher difficulty levels and single player that it's going to give you an advantage, and you want to spend the time to figure that out, and to go into that depth, because how much did we hear about Civilization 5 being streamlined? This isn't for the core Civilization gamer anymore. They're just trying to get any gamer in the world to try to play this game.
Yeah.
That you would be able to enjoy Civilization 6 on the level of, you can get by and do very well without micromanaging these things, but if you want to, then you do get a bonus. But it's not so much of a substantial bonus that you are at a disadvantage by not learning how to do that.
Of course you'll be at a disadvantage, though, if it's worth doing. My issue with this is that too many times throughout Civ's history, you get into situations where you can gain these kinds of advantages, often very significant advantages, through doing rote actions. It's always optimal to do it, but it always takes a ton of inputs, and yet, you know, like, every good player winds up doing it because it provides such an advantage. So you just do it over and over and over again, and there's not even a lot of thought that goes, okay, let me think about this carefully. Do I want a 50 hammer advantage on everyone else with no downsides? And let's consider this carefully. Well, yes, you want a 50 hammer advantage. The kind of micromanagement that leads to that being given without any strategy trade-offs or anything else to consider, you just do it and you get the extra yields, I don't think that needs to be in the game. You're not really adding depth there. You're just adding extra inputs.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Like, if the decision of what civics you're going to have on a turn-by-turn basis becomes a mechanical process instead of a strategic process, then it's not going to be as interesting as the social policies. Because the social policies in Civ 5 were a long-term investment. The downside was that you could never change them. So if you started the game on your tradition and then you decided later, oh, I wish I would have done liberty because I wanted to settle more cities or whatever, you can't go back and change that. This way you can change it, but if you're changing it all the time, then yeah, it just possibly becomes a mechanical process that does not feel like a strategic decision.
You need enough switching cost of some kind, yeah, so that it's not always optimal to just switch all the time, because you would never do that in Civ 4. Well, maybe you might if spiritual, but that was an advantage conferred to the spiritual trait, whereas anybody else would eat anarchy to be civic flopping all the time, and so you wouldn't do it ordinarily.
But if every civ and civ 6 can do that, then...
Yeah, then, yeah.
Nah, I mean, if they make the governments and policies and all that so bad that you're actually looking to flip every turn, then either production costs are too low or the time to do things is so low that you're doing that, which I don't think is a real issue, because I can't foresee a situation, I mean, just taking progress times in Civ 5 as an example, where you're going to do one thing with a policy this turn And then the very next turn, it's like, oh, nope, I'm done with that. Switch it.
Well, I mean, unless there's like a civic or something or a policy that gives you a discount on buying things, you put that in place one turn, buy a bunch of crap, then switch it out the next turn. Like, that would be super exploitative.
Well, yeah, but I have a feeling
I'm just hoping they were smart enough to not put stuff like that in the game, is basically what I'm getting at. But it all depends on yeah, what the costs are, what the benefits are. And I think more important than whether the benefits are good or bad might be how specific the bonuses are. Because if the bonuses get too specific, then you're talking about situations where it's like, oh, it's only good for this very, very, very one specific thing. So only on the turn that I'm doing that one very, very, very specific thing do I put that civic in place.
Well, yeah, in that case, that's a little too much. But even still, I doubt they'll let you just go flip back and forth constantly.
Yeah, I certainly hope not.
Given how many potential policies there are, because if there's an entire civic tree equal to the tech tree in size, one hopes, then there's probably going to be a crap ton of policies in there. And you're probably going to find a few that you like and just stick with them. There'll probably be a few pulled from Civ 5's type social policies. So I'm sure there'll be an expander one that lets you expand faster, etc., etc. So you'll probably put that on for a while and then flip it off and switch to something else.
Well, I like that better than right now in Civ 5, you have, because you're talking about expanding, you have Liberty, and that's good in the first part of the game, but it's not so good later on. You need other things. So being able to swap that out so you have starting policies and middle of the game policies and late game policies, I like that better.
Yeah. One hopes when you're at the end of the game, you're still not using the very first policy because it was so good.
Yeah, right. We hope nothing is OP like that.
Yeah, this combination of social policy and government. I mean, in social policies, okay, how many social policies have you been able to accumulate over the game? And has that been advantageous to you? And you just keep adding in them and adding them and adding them. And then being able now to swap out with the civics, I think it's hopefully going to be a little bit more qualitative versus quantitative in the sense that you got all of these things to choose from, but depending upon your government type, you have to make a choice out of all of these possible economic ones, which one do you want? All of these military ones, which one do you want? And I think the trade-off, as we've been getting at and also in the chat, is the time that you're spending to micromanage number one, but also perhaps the specific civics are going to be constructed in a way that if you decide to micromanage them, you're not going to be able to get much of an advantage out of them because you didn't let them grow over time in the sense that it is a longer-term investment, whatever we define that to be. I think the idea, hopefully, is that there's also an advantage, a comparable advantage, to investing in a particular civic, even if you now go to a different government type, to say, okay, I'm going to keep that civic because that's still advantageous to me, but I'm switching this government type because now I can get another one. It's a stack on top of, say, that military one, or now I'm going to get an economic bonus in addition to this military bonus that I had in this previous government type.
Mm. Yeah, and actually, I'm hoping that's more the case.
Yeah, like
yeah, we're going to have to see actual numbers on things to really evaluate it properly.
Some of your choices are probably going to be determined by what type of empire you're building or what district you're building.
A policy or a civic or whatever that, say, buffs libraries that exist would be a good thing. But if there's policies or whatever that are like 50% discount on libraries, then I think that's going to start to go into that bad territory that I was talking about, where that's only useful on those handful of turns where you're building a library.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a balance there where you want people to be thinking about reevaluating their choices, but not so much that, oh my gosh, I need to be changing it constantly, as opposed to, well, I set this civic and it's good for 50 or 60 turns because it's just that good. It's good now and it's good later because the benefit is so broad that what's the advantage to actually switching it?
Yeah.
And also those kind that do you always choose that particular one? Do you always go that civic to start with? And then that also goes back to, you know, what we've said before on the show and Phil on this episode about it just becomes not an interesting choice. You've quote unquote learned the game. You know that this more often than not is always the way to go. So you want to be able to have interesting decisions and being able to evaluate that at different points in the game. So it doesn't become stagnant, but at the same time, you don't want it to be like squirrel, new civic, squirrel.
Yep.
New civic.
Right. And I would say that maybe changing your civics out maybe once or twice per era sounds like that would probably be a pretty well-paced system. But yeah, if it's every like 5 or 10 turns, then I'm going to be like, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, if you have something that's good for 50 or 60 turns, like the library thing, you've already put down the cities you want to expand to, but you're trying to build up the cities. And that's a great thing to have something that's going to give you a discount on buildings. But then once those cities get decently developed, you're going to be like, oops, no, I need the military thing now.
It's just like having civics that are tied to absolute value bonuses versus percentage-based ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of early, mid, and late game policies. And so I'm hoping that means what you're doing in the game is going to help define which policies you also want to run.
Well, yeah, because if you've got a separate civic tree, then presumably you're going to be getting choices. Which civic do you want to be researching right now? Here's how many turns it's going to take. Here are the benefits you're going to be able to get from it. It's like, okay, I could get this in 5 turns and I could start using that, but this is going to take me 8 turns, but that's going to be a much better choice because I'm going to be able to use that for a longer period of time. So therefore, it's going to be a few more turns till I swap out my civic, but then that new civic is going to give me that much more of a benefit that there was. You actually had to stop and think about which one are you going to choose and which one are you choosing for that particular game and what are you going for in the present circumstances?
Well, I guess there's also a bit of a hitch in there is that you can change your policy cards for free every time you unlock a civic. So if you're just trying to do it on the free times, then you have to line up your timing of completing a civic with the timing that you want to switch out a policy. So you may not go research down that one civic path because you're never going to use those civics for the next, 30 turns because you're doing something else.
Other first impressions that I had, I noticed there was a Wonder video of someone building the Oracle. So Wonder videos are kind of sort of back. That's really cool. I really like that they're in-engine. Feels like it gives a great sense of context to them. It feels more like it's my Oracle, instead of just the Oracle.
Yeah, you built it here.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that I noticed about that was kind of disappointing was it was a little bit anticlimactic. Like, I hope they still add some kind of splash screen or dialogue prompt or something like that that maybe tells you what the bonus of the wonder is and not just be like, oh, the animation's done. Now we just sit here waiting for you to click an exit button in the top corner of the game.
Well, the video that you're referring to, which was published to the official Sid Meier's Civilization YouTube channel, does say your civilization has finished construction on the Oracle. And as for the bonus, well, hopefully you remember what the bonus is because that's why you constructed it in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But now that wonders are actually going to take a place on the map, take a hex on the map, then perhaps if you mouse over it, there'll be just a little, dialogue box that reminds you this is giving you +3 culture per turn or whatever it is.
Yeah, but they could stick that information in that little dialogue box, too, and that would at least, I think, be a little bit of an improvement. Just a reminder of why the heck you build the thing, since it's such a monumental thing that took up a tile and a lot of turns.
The way Dan's describing it might actually work better for if it's in the tooltip, because let's say you go conquer somebody, and they had a bunch of wonders that you didn't build, and you can't tell what they are right off the mark.
Yeah, well, it can be both.
Yeah.
Put it in the prompt and put it in the tooltip.
This last 2 weeks, there really wasn't a huge amount to, quote-unquote, analyze because, well, they're all getting ready for E3.
Yeah, which everybody's been speculating in a thread. Are they there? Are they going to be there? Are they going to be there? And what everybody's kind of concluded at this point is it's going to be like with Civ 5, where most of it's going to be closed-door stuff that we're not going to see until a few weeks down the road.
Possible. 2K has a tendency to not be a major promoter, so they're not going to get on stage. 2K will only get on stage with Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo if they're doing a game for those consoles. Otherwise, they have never actually really been there. They just do all their stuff in the background. So chances of seeing a lot is questionable. But whenever IGN or like any of the live streamer group is doing their shows, there's a chance that 2K will pop on for one of those. So you might see something at E3, but it'll be on one of the
Other stream somewhere.
Yep.
Yes, and we're hoping on the next episode of Polycast, seeing as how E3 happens in our off recording week, why don't these people coordinate with us? Crying out loud. Anyway, it's very inconvenient. We hope to have someone who is planning to be at E3 from the 14th to the 16th of June to be on the next episode to talk about what they saw relative to Civilization VI, or at least what they can tell us what they saw relative to Civilization VI from E3. 2K, just yesterday, the day before I recorded this on the 10th of June, tweet your E3 questions for a special Q&A. And so there's already been, of course, questions in anticipation of E3. They didn't wait until E3 to actually announce that. And my favorite question, and of course the answer to this is no, is from Awesome. Will there be enough cowbell? No. No, no, no. There's never enough cowbell.
I cannot fit all my questions into one tweet.
That's not enough characters. Really, it's not.
No, what you do is you type it up, you put it on a blog, then you tweet the blog over.
Oh.
And it's in one tweet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yes, will you answer all my questions found here?
Yeah.
Answer, no.
Yeah.
And you must respond in essay form.
I'll throw in some multiple choice questions. Email me your Scantron.
Link wants to tell us you actually have multiplayer that's not going to ooze the first time we try it.
Oh, Mackie, come on. It'll ooze the second time.
No, you must play the single player to learn how to play multiplayer.
Oh, no. Gross.
That's right. You have to get to level 10 first. Then you can play multiplayer.
Ew.
Yeah.
You have to build the wonder that enables multiplayer.
Oh, I thought it was just going to be, we noticed you haven't won a single-player game yet. To unlock multiplayer, what you need to do?
You must beat the game on Deity 5 times.
I'd laugh.
Hey, my long bus trip has been saved in response to episode 256. Ryaka said, nice episode as always, but episode 256, geez, I can't believe she forgot to celebrate filling the bite.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing as how the last episode was entitled All Aboard the Hype Train, I just said, well, the hype train doesn't stop at that terminal. So how could we possibly celebrate that?
We're going to keep doing this till the megabyte thing, right? I mean, we're going 10 years anyway. What's another, hundreds.
Yeah, Ryaka wants us to spread our wings and fulfill our destiny.
1 million episodes. I don't think that's going to happen.
We'll keep doing this until thousands of years old. We're good. We're good.
Totally. Now, as for that being old thing, might have to work on that.
Well,
Aaron 90495 said, great episode as always, but as I've said before, I'll plead that you upload the whole unedited podcast somewhere, as I'm sure there's a lot of extra conversation that'd be great to hear and fill my downtime. I can't catch the live recordings in the summer, and it's always great to hear the whole two and a half hour episodes unfiltered.
No, Dan does good editing.
No, we need editing, believe us.
Yeah, I mean, I would never rule out the possibility, but what I did say was a greater likelihood would be maybe not an entire unedited recording of an episode, but perhaps here is what the edited version of this topic sounded like, and then here's the unedited version as a comparison, like an extra production or something like that. But as for filling the downtime, I'd said, you know, in addition to Polycast and our extensive archive of, I don't know, like 10 years worth of material, there's also Modcast and Turncast that you could listen to during this time. That was on one thread on CFC, and in another thread, Alliterus said, great episode, but then also had a question to which one of our panelists recently replied to. Question was, made me think about the trend of giving up the idea on human-like AI. In the original Civilization V, AI tried to pretend it's human and only had a few special abilities like calling you his favorite city-state. Expansions added intrigue and art exchange that didn't work on humans. Civ 6 goes even farther with core features like trading giving you insight into AI thoughts. Will trade be as important in multiplayer where it doesn't give this advantage? Jason?
Well, basically, I just responded by saying that probably the only way that I could think to make that sort of intrigue system work for human players would be if the game actually tracked certain in-game actions and then reported them back to other players. And the couple examples I give is if you open up a diplomacy screen and start trying to negotiate with another player, the game could maybe have a random chance or a weighted chance of telling the other players that you are in diplomatic negotiations or that you negotiated a trade deal. And then they could even do things like if I go to another civ and try to bribe them to declare war on, say, for example, Dan might get a notification saying that I tried to bribe that civ or that I'm plotting against him. And that would probably be the only way that you could get something like that to work in this sort of game, at least short of, you know, plugging electrodes directly into my brain and figuring out what the heck I'm planning in 50 turns.
Well, if it's an in-action game that you take, the game can record that. I mean, heck, we know the Civilization V logs how much gold you bully from city-states. Not that I would know that the game does this or anything.
Not that he has an achievement for that or anything.
Certainly something that it could display to the player, right? Just like with the espionage system with Civilization V Brave New World. Just so you know, our spies have uncovered that so-and-so is plotting against you. They're not just going to always tell you that. They're not just going to tell anybody that. It would take into account the fact that, hey, we have already positive diplomatic relations, so we choose to share this information with you. So hopefully it's not just random for random sake, but that it's tied to in-game action or inaction that then will give you that little bit of information. I mean, essentially it's math, right? And it's recording data, but you present the data in such a way that it gives it a human-like quality. So it's pseudo-human. It's simulating human. We don't actually want the AI to become human and rise up and take us over. That's bad.
Maybe. Yeah, no, there's a lot of actions you can take in the game that could easily be sent over to another human player, even if you don't have, quote-unquote, agenda to go with. What are you building? Who you're sending envoys to for city-states, trade routes, war declarations, yada, yada, yada. That's entirely plausible.
Right.
From episode 254, the feedback, Jaglio, I really enjoyed the discussion of going back to play Civilization 4. Oddly enough, the one time I tried it, okay, so we've only tried Civilization 4 once, how dare you? I wasn't fully prepared for the, for the one unit per tile versus multiple units per tile and hexagons as compared to square adjustments. But the one thing that I wasn't expecting to trip me up and wound up being the final straw that sent me back to Civ 5 for good was the embarkation to transports adjustment. Exploring the innards of the continent is a lot more difficult when I have to wait until I can build a special boat to get my units there. Frowny face.
Oh. The wait until sailing. I know.
You just buy the maps.
And I don't know, Phil, I think you had a response to that or something back.
I had a pretty long response to that because embarkation in Civ 4 takes a lot less game commands than Civ 5, unless you're only bringing like three units across continent. But intercontinental invasions actually became more input intensive in Civ 5, so it pains me to see someone saying, I gave up on transports when it's actually much easier.
Yeah, I'm definitely on your side with this one, Phil. When you've got 30 friggin' units that you got to transport across the ocean, that becomes super tedious because you've got to move every single one of them one by one each turn. Because if you try to move all of them at once, they end up interrupting each other's movements and nobody goes anywhere. It was so messy.
Yeah, the pathing clutter, it gets pretty rough.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind Civ 6 bringing back some sort of transport. Like, I'd be okay with some sort of hybrid approach where maybe units can embark and disembark by themselves, but then you can also build dedicated transports that can hold maybe 3, 4, or 5 units. You know, maybe they can get promotions or whatever to upgrade them further. Because they already have that sort of precedent in Civ 5 with aircraft carriers holding airplanes and with nuclear subs or whatever holding nukes and missile cruisers holding missiles. So
having a stacking unit, though, is dangerous because of the micromanagement advantage you can get from it.
Possibly.
Potentially.
This is streamlining, though.
But and by streamlining, you mean like having 4 transports on the coast with 5 units each and rotating them so you just blow up cities. And people can't kill your units because you keep running them back onto the transports.
Well, no, you have to still get off the transport, which takes a turn so they can shoot you. Then you have to get back on the transport, which takes a turn. And you didn't actually do anything.
We'll see. I mean,
if they let you take shots from the transports with your artillery.
Well, I'm assuming that's not in play because like 5 artillery on a transport setup shooting while you move is stupid.
A good compromise would maybe be you just can't disembark directly onto land from the transport. Kind of like you imagine like the D-Day invasion, World War II, you had all the little tiny transport ships were on the bigger destroyers and battleships or whatever, and then they all have to disembark the big ship in order to get to the beach. So maybe you have something like that where your land unit has to disembark from the transport onto the ocean and then actually do the amphibious attack. That might work better, maybe.
Nah, I'd be fine just jumping onto the land. But I would say if you're trying to get off the transport, you can't attack onto land, though.
Yeah, that was actually what I meant. Yeah, you just can't attack onto land. You have to get off on the ocean or onto empty land and then do the attack, which would take a whole turn and you'd be vulnerable in the meantime.
Yeah, that would be as bad. Although that would cause more micro, though, again.
Don't necessarily want a situation where you have to disembark onto land. Like, what I was kind of getting at was you could also have a thing where your land units can get off of the transport unit, maybe still in the water, and then just go into an embark state, and then you can do an amphibious invasion. That was where the comparison to D-Day came in.
Yeah, you could also kick them off in the middle of the ocean and watch them walk the rest of the way.
Yes. And maybe there could be a tech or something that you need to get to do that. You know, maybe that's something that doesn't become available until, like, combustion. You can't have your ancient marines sitting in your galley that just suddenly build another boat while they're inside a galley.
Yeah, I don't think you want them to rowboat across while the city is shooting at them.
Yeah, but I could see something like that maybe working.
Yeah, I mean, the only real question is, do you let the transport continue moving after a unit got off? Because then if you do and they have high movements, then you drop one unit here, one unit there, one unit there, one unit there, and just like spam the coastline with a single transport, only allowed to do one per turn, at which point then it becomes less useful.
Yeah, it's kind of messy.
Yeah, or maybe just keep transports as faster than just embarking yourself, because that would be dumb. But then maybe takes twice as much movement for the transport to drop somebody off, so you can't just spam max.
Yeah, it uses a movement point instead of the turn.
Well, it uses two movement points instead of the turn or something.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Are we going to have like rough terrain in the ocean? So then some ocean hexes, it's like, oh, no.
Oh, you mean like sandbars and things like that?
Yeah, or storms.
Ooh, hurricane hexes.
Permanent storms across the area.
Yeah.
Oh, you could actually make a hurricane unit that spawns like a barbarian.
Sure, because all hurricanes last forever.
You cleared the hurricane encampment. Congratulations,
well, maybe it only lasts
50 gold.
For a little bit. No, you don't clear it from an encampment. It's there for like two or three turns.
The source of the storm.
We could just have like a Lovecraft encampment in the bottom of the ocean where just Cthulhu monsters come out and attack your ships.
Oh, goody.
That'll be a mod.
From episode 250, we're with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Ansleon, and Fayar.
First one was from... Which, of course, Dan, would you like to explain the Renaissance thing, which I don't love for people, for the guy who was it near?
Shaglio.
Shaglio, yeah. I know, I don't love it. It hurts my ears. You haven't heard the full version where it's not just Dan, but Uber and a couple of other people doing it. It's like,
This is one of the rare times where Mackie and I have an alliance.
It definitely comes up more on Turncast than it does on Polycast. It actually started with Uber, but it initially started with just Renaissance? The Renaissance. It's just someone repeating the word Renaissance.
Why? Why did this happen in my absence?
And then it got to the point where, again, I am certain it was Uber that after Renaissance, it was just the on that particular word, and it's actually no longer so much the Renaissance. The Renaissance. That version is long gone. It was the original, but it was quickly supplanted by this high-pitched...
Yeah, see, the original version was funny.
Well, part of the reason that the other is enduring is because of how much has been expressed that people dislike it. But
yeah, when the entire rest of the people in TeamSpeak are telling you guys to shut up.
I feel like I did Polycast a disservice by taking off like a year or two from Civ 5 to basically throw away thousands of hours into EU. Because I might have been able to nip this in the bud by declaring on Dan instantly anytime he did it, or anybody else did it for that matter. But now that it's such an ingrained thing, that might not be enough. So I'm open to suggestions, listeners, as to how to destroy certain practices. Because after all, destruction is one of the pillars of me and team play.
Why Uber started initially doing the Renaissance? The Renaissance? But if it wasn't Uber for doing the repeat of the Renaissance, he was definitely the first to do the high pitch. And as we've said before, Uber is just the American version of me. And it just seemed like a fun way to troll people. Plus, it also is just – it's almost singing to the – And of course, we love to sing on the show as well, so it just kind of seemed to fit into that wheelhouse.
By your standards of singing, maybe.
I think the bigger question is, why has it still been allowed to happen? And I like the idea that we blame Phil.
Well, it's also because nobody's invented a thing that lets me slap you two through the internet, so...
I wasn't around to stop it. I'm at fault. It's my fault. I could have prevented the disaster.
And now you two get to hear it every Saturday.
No... One of the great tragedies.
Perhaps in terms of more substantive feedback, as humorous as that was.
Yeah, also Defiant Mars was talking about where we were talking about he's saying that in his experience, 9 out of 10 AI requests or demands are completely and totally observed. No, I will not give you half my gold income, nor will I give you two of my lectures I only have one copy of. Rotten hell, Alex, when he said Tartarus, which is cool. Oh yeah, ineffectual unique units. Yeah, the Beyond Earth Carver, the Aegis, and the Roctopus. But the Roctopus is fun.
Whatever you say, Mike Lua.
Yeah, that fun misspelling thing in the other section. That was like, ah? Yeah, what was that? You listed all these names and you put magenta in there? Magenta?
Yeah.
I just threw a few things in there, yeah. You're definitely the most butchered of the regular co-host names. Like, all time, too.
Yeah, right from the pre-pilot.
Yep.
I believe the first pronunciation from Locutus, who, along with Mackie, myself, and Imran Siddiqui were the original co-hosts, was Macawela, which I'm sure we have has not been said on this show in years. That was the first mispronunciation that I remember.
Yeah.
Macawela.
I guess he was going something more Hawaiian-ish sounding or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it made you sound very exotic. This is true.
He's like, not exactly, dude.
Yeah, no, Mackie's from Texas. That's not exotic.
To some people, it is, actually.
B. Keiko, who was a guest co-host on the show, he said that had a great time with you folks again. It was nice to have Lisa show up and make me feel especially at home, because the last time Brandon was a guest on the show, Lisa was a regular co-host, and Lisa was filling in for Madjin. And when Lisa left the show, Madjin replaced Lisa, so it was very weird. But then B. Keiko also said, in response to favorite era, my boyfriend just listened to the podcast, announced everyone who said Renaissance is the best era is correct. Also, it's difficult to spell. I actually didn't point out that it wasn't a question of best era. It was a question of favorite era. But my response was, what were his arguments to support why he felt that Renaissance was best / favorite? Haven't heard back. So clearly he offered no explanation why. He just wanted to say Renaissance, so we would say Renaissance again on the show. You're welcome.
You know what, though? Like, it's wrong. Renaissance is neither the best nor the favorite era. I strike it down.
And sadly, I must agree with Phil. Huh?
Well, we wound up agreeing on the importance of the classical.
We did, and I know it was your runner-up.
And that caused me to rate it second, just because I like that you have more physical gameplay options opening up in Industrial. But like you said, from an important standpoint, most of your important choices are made there. So yeah, Renaissance really doesn't offer anything beyond access to some good social policies. The units there are lackluster. I mean, okay, cannons are good, sure, that's fine. But it's not like a huge spike from what you had available previously. It's not Civ 4 Renaissance, we'll put it that way. You don't draft like 50 rifles and then sit on half of the world with them or whip out cavalry for the same purpose. It's not Civ 4 Renaissance. It just doesn't offer enough.
It does have the best wonders, I would say. The Renaissance era does, especially on high level play, in DD play. Those are usually the wonders that I start aiming for.
Which ones are you thinking about specifically?
Leaning Tower, Sistine Chapel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Porcelain Tower.
I feel like the ideology wonders are really good too, except for maybe orders.
Well, and again, the classical era, back to an earlier topic, the longest lasting combat unit. What era does the siege tower come in again? Oh, right, classical.
Whatever.
I'm just classically correct. It's okay, Phil. Get a minute.
Classically trolling.
They're not mutually exclusive.
That's true. Trolling is often the correct move.
From episode 248 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Madjin, and Mike W.
A little video which was cute about two scouts fighting over the ruins. Not a spoiler because this has happened in so many games. Guess what? The two scouts fighting didn't get the ruins.
Yeah, there was a third player involved.
Third player that got beaten, literally.
What are you doing?
I'm going to explore those ruins.
I was here first.
We were both here at the exact same time.
I've been scouting since the dawn of recorded history. I have seniority.
Well, I've never found any ruins before. There weren't any around my city, so it's only fair.
Oh, really? That sucks. Sucks that life isn't fair and I'm taking the ruins anyway.
I am very good at fighting with a stick.
So am I.
This was from the same group that did the Dealing with Gandhi video that we talked about on 245 from White Lightning. Video description of this, by the way. Scouts are playing an entirely different game than everybody else.
True.
Yeah.
Honestly, as much as I enjoyed the video, I actually enjoyed some of the commentary because there was something that I did not pick up initially. And it actually has to do with the visual. The first comment was from Zally Click. Wow, Greece really rushed electricity.
Yeah.
And then Afterbury Village Center is like, pause at 1:15 yeah. and look at the left and there's this big transform. It's just hilarious.
Yeah. Athens has power lines and 5 pop.
Yep.
Oops.
Chaotic Arrow's like, is it bad of me that I wanted a scene where they all beat each other with the sticks?
Stick fight.
No, it's not bad.
Although Bob the DJ, let's settle this diplomatically. said no one ever.
Screw you, the rune's mine. Don't like it? I'm just going to take you off the map.
Meta things that people have held a grudge against other civs for.
Ish.
Yeah.
No, no, ish.
Yeah.
That ish has happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
From episode 250, who are with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Anzleon, and Fayar.
We love the King Day, a video from the White Lightning YouTube channel who has previously featured a scout fight and what to do about Gandhi. The shortest of the three, it's just under 3 minutes in length. It's kind of one of those videos where you need to have played Civ, one Civ title at some point, to really truly appreciate this on the levels that they're getting at. One that might actually be missed, and it appears first in the video, between the two characters that are talking. It's primarily a conversation just between two characters.
Do you love the king?
No, she's stupid.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it actually does do that slight problem with the gendering.
It does do that, but as we know, it's only a problem with Mackie because, you know, she's the only woman on the internet. Was that just a reference to bring that in to this?
Yes, it was.
No.
Yes.
Boo! Troops suck! We want money! And things!
Yeah, boo! The king sucks! Nobody loves the king!
Except for the people that voted for We Love the King Day.
That's probably a minority being blown out of proportion.
In terms of exchanges...
Capturing cities is bad.
Yes.
We should spend less on siege machines.
Yeah, yes, good.
And more on building things.
There we go. Okay, back on track now.
Like a really big wall to keep all the foreigners out.
Thanks, Donald.
And they're going to cancel all open border agreements.
They're not agreements. We're being invaded. We're at war with like half the countries
in the
world.
And then we're going to get more whales.
The recurring theme.
You know we're landlocked, right?
Yeah, and whales are like land available. They like land.
Do you know what a whale is?
No.
Do you even?
Yes, I join you in your rage on this thing and stuff. Do you know what the thing and stuff is? Rage! But do you know what? Rage!
Yes, think first or rage first? Rage first.
Always the rage. Ha! Polycast is always the rage. Ha!
From episode 253 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Q&L, and B. Kaiko.
Civ 5 in a Nutshell by Blue Owl. Civ 5 is described as a brilliant education on why you should never trust anyone. Well, I don't know about anyone.
Trust no one but yourself.
Well, no, it says don't trust anyone, and you are someone, so therefore you shouldn't trust yourself either.
That's probably safe, though, because if you overtrust yourself, then you make mistakes.
Ah, some non-barbarian neighbors. Brilliant. Yes, I will make a declaration of friendship with you. You'll make a great ally, and then you can declare war on me. That's fine. That's totally fine. Okay, let's forget about all these nice buildings that provide food for my citizens. It's time for war! Just one more turn, and that's my friend dealt with. Now I can build my empire in peace. And now everyone thinks I'm a warmongerer. Brilliant. They started it! They sent 3 units to attack me, so I annexed their entire empire!
See, I don't tend to go down that path anymore, because these things have called Declaration of Friendship. What are those? Let's just avoid that path. That just seems to be asking for someone to get annoyed at you. Like, any little thing that you do once they're friends, they suddenly hold you to greater account.
It's only 8 p.m, so I have time for one more turn, and now it's 4 a.m! Just one more turn.
Yeah.
Yep, that's pretty much Civ in a nutshell.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
Because it's a tsunami, they all get on surfboards and ride it halfway through the continent.
You can't really ride a tsunami.
Well, you can't really not ride it if you're in it.
Well, the way they work isn't like a wave crashing.
Yeah, I don't see why not. Ride a tsunami. 6 turns, let's say it becomes 4 turns, except when it lands or when it gets to the coast or whatever, it's only got like half of its hit points left because it's been injured.
Sure, whatever you like.
Yes, whatever I want. Thank you, Phil.
Well, it's funny, you're a tsunami. That works like a wave rather than rising tide really fast or something. And sure. Will an army survive it and just push them a few miles inland? Why not?
If they're in a boat, boats go to the top of the tsunami. If you can power your way when you get near the top.
If they're already on a boat, fine.
Obviously, they're going to be on the boat. You didn't just kick them off the transport. Okay, guys, go swimming. You can swim the rest of the way.
Oh, and speaking of, Mackie saying more Mackie, it was about time for one of your taglines.
Which one?
Because a boat was mentioned.
Oh, I'm on a boat.
Thank you.
And I'm staying on this boat if we're in the middle of a hurricane. Thanks.
Now that builders have charges rather than unlimited like workers in Civ 5, if there's any policies even remotely related to builders, I have a feeling people are going to try and stick with those a lot more than they would stick with other stuff.
Oh man, is it going to take two whole charges to chop a forest and then build an improvement?
I guess it depends. Is it?
Yeah.
Are we talking about actions or are we talking about improvements? Because strictly speaking, clearing a jungle is not an improvement. As Civ defines it, not a capital I improvement.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm wondering if the clearing the underlying tile is going to be included or if you have to do that separately. Because if so, there's half your charges right there.
Although, if you look at Civ 5, if it's similar style, you clearing the jungle before putting down the farm was two actions, technically.
Yeah, but the difference was in Civ 5, it costs a certain number of turns to do that. But as I understand it, in Civ 6, the builders do everything instantly,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. There are people that are still going to want to continue to play Civilization 5 for any combinations of reasons, which may just end up then meaning that you have both Civilization 5 and Civilization 6 installed on your machine, just like people had Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 installed.
Or it'll be a Win 10 exclusive, and there you go.
Oh, God, I hope that's not the case.
We will now install Sid Meier's Civilization 6. Please wait while we upgrade your Windows experience. What?
All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening to Polycast episode number 257. Your hosts have been Big Boss Dan Q.
Now streamlined.
Mad Jin.
Hi.
The Mian team.
I am the ultimate interface.
Makalua.
I still need more caffeine to deal with this.
And I have been Mega Bears fan. Invader destroyed.
Of course, neither Phil nor Mackie are here on time. Oh my gosh, Phil.
Yeah, screw you. I'm here on time.
You connected just in time to hear that, too.
Okay, something about city states. Because I don't actually have a list of topics in front of me.
Really?
Really, Mad? Adam Mercer asks, any system requirements released yet? I need to know if I have to buy a new computer. Oh, well, you don't need to know the system requirements to know if you have to buy a new computer, because the answer is obviously yes. Just always buy a new computer.
Just do it.
Sir, we're still trying to lock those down. As soon as we do, we'll make an announcement. Oh, okay, so they haven't taxed the systems enough yet. Okay, they're adding more stuff. Cool. From Elvishard, a recurring guest, if Dan can't bully city-states, he isn't going to want to play Civ 6? Oh no, I'm going to need to play Civilization 6 to then show Firaxis how wrong they are. That's an easy answer to that question.
Okay, good, you caught that.
Yes, I did.
I hate people who do that.
I'll just put that in the blooper reel, and then no one will have any context for what that was. It's great.
Just imagine randomly, I hate people who do that. But do what? What did they do? What made him so mad?
And then every listener is like, oh man, I hope he's not talking about me.
Mackie!
What?
Background noises.
Oh, sorry.
Getting very loud.
Look, it is just Mackie's computer way of saying, Mackie, talk more.
Yeah. Apparently.
Well, yes, but I can't control what this mic does with the background noises sometimes. I don't even hear what's so loud.
Well, it's only when you go quiet. So
yeah, that auto-adjust is probably on. So it's probably trying to pick up the softer stuff since you're not saying anything.
Yeah, yeah. So just say something, even if it's, oh, that's a great point, Dan. You are so smart, Dan. You're absolutely right, Dan. Then you see,
no.
You've ended up, it's just a suggestion.
I agree.
He could just sing the Polycast theme song the whole time.
Oh, yes. Yes, that would be fine. And then maybe Mackie could finally win the sing-off. And then she would be able to control who sings on the show. Record date, June 11th, 2016. Scouts and King Video Clips, copyright White Lightning. Nutshell Video Clips, copyright Blue Owl. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.